Next poem is about, this is good in terms of hearing. Can you hear all the way in the back pretty well? Good. This is a poem about Heinrich Schliemann, who is the man who dug up Troy. And recently a man came to Buffalo and gave a lecture on Schliemann, and he was a kind of iconoclast. He wanted to expose Schliemann, which seemed like a foolish thing to do, since we loathe him so much. And I think it sort of, for me, it suggested the sort of resistance we have to admiring people. And this poem really is sort of a celebration of Schliemann and the kind of art that Schliemann was concerned with all his life. And the way his life itself is a kind of unbelievable work of art.
Two more?
Okay. What should I be saying? All right. I'm acting natural, yeah. I always have this stiff look.
That was good. It always helps to have a comedian in the audience.
Okay, one more.
One more, and then we're going to let everybody enjoy. Okay, that's it.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Actually, I like those lights before that way. I mean, so if you want to turn those back, that's fine with me.
Which ones do you want?
Yeah, why don't you turn those, what it was before? That's fine. Okay.
Let's just wait a couple minutes till I have a chance to move.
All right.
That is great. It's nice to have it over there.
Okay, let's go home.
Thanks, sir.
All right. Heinrich Schliemann. If the main plot in his life were his rise from grocer's apprentice and shipwrecked scrivener to rich indigo merchant with a palace in St. Petersburg, the master of a dozen languages, it would be easy for critics like us to patronize. Easy to grant him a place in the storybook with Dick Whittington and the woodcutter's youngest son. And we could pity his distance from the real world when he leaves the trading firm in middle age to learn the ancient Greek of Homer and falls in love with an Athenian schoolgirl as he hears her recite Andromache's long plea and marries her, moving his life from storybook into dream, as if the noise of traffic outside the church were the hubbub on the fields around Troy. If only he hadn't taken it into his head to dig in a sleepy backwater village for Troy's walls and somehow found them. If he hadn't knelt in the dirt all day with beautiful Sophia, chipping away crust from the tiles of Priam's palace, from bracelets that once circled the slim wrists of princesses. If he hadn't proved that his dream was graspable, that the stories he loved were fashioned in the high style not to escape the world, but to remember it, an offering to the dead bright ones whose gestures, vivid as they are in song, were doubtless in the flesh more dazzling.